Thank you all for coming out. I wanted to call the meeting to order. Am I supposed to whack this?
Give it a whack.
A special meeting of the Issaquah School Board. We appreciate many of you taking your time this evening and joining us. We're going to start with the Pledge of Allegiance, and Vice Principal Harris is going to lead us in the pledge. So, if you'll stand. Thank you.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So tonight we wanted to start a conversation regarding potential changes to the Liberty High School graduation requirements for the class of 2019 and beyond. This conversation started with changes to the state law regarding graduation requirements so that at a minimum students must have 24 credits to graduate, and some of those items that are on there that haven't been on before is two fine art requirements as well as world language, unless you have a personal pathway that provides you another elective to pursue. So that started the conversation at the other two high schools, Issaquah High and Skyline. It was pretty clear they had to go from 22 credits because they were no longer abiding by the law, so we had to bump that up to 24. The question came, what happens at Liberty? And so we had a conversation as a board. There was a recommendation, proposed options provided to the board by the staff. And so during that conversation, it became clear that we needed to have a conversation with the community about this so that it wasn't something that just kind of happened. And we wanted to at least let you know where those ideas came from and then allow you to provide input, because we have not made a decision as of yet as to how to change those. Now, there do, again, need to be some type of changes, because even the 29.5 credits required for the class of 2017 and 18 are not sufficient in areas such as world language and the fine arts. So we would have to make some type of change to the graduation requirements to incorporate the new state law, but how far do we go? And so that is what we're going to discuss tonight. This is our agenda. We'll have a presentation by the superintendent in the cabinet that's sitting over there. Superintendent Ron Thiele is with us tonight. Dennis Wright, Associate Superintendent Emily Hard, Executive Director of High Schools Paula Phelps. I don't know your title, Lisa. Lisa Heckman.
Executive Director of Personnel.
And our CFO, Jade Cooper, is also with us. And our Executive Director of Communications, Elle Michelle. We have a special guest, and I am so thankful that they came today, two members of the State Board of Education, Connie Fletcher and Peter Mayer, both of whom were school board members prior to their stint on the State Board of Education. So they have been in our seats as board members of the school board. In fact, Connie Fletcher was in my seat prior to me being elected. So she was actually a member of the Issaquah School District, and her children attended Liberty High School. So I wanted to start off this conversation with the superintendent. We'll get input from the state board. They do have a presentation they're going to give. And then an opportunity, we have it as public input / questions and comments. So what I've asked is that you take time to have your questions so that it will be easy for us to go through and answer those, so then I'll read off the questions and we'll have the right person, whether it's a staff member, the superintendent, the board, or the State Board of Education, to answer those questions. And then, depending on how late we go with that, we'll have a time of public input where you can at least provide us some of your thoughts regarding what you've heard tonight. So with that, I will start with the superintendent. And this will be podcast, by the way, so this will be accessible. Oh, thank you, Brian. We will not be making a decision tonight, so this will be on our agenda for our November 12th board meeting next Wednesday in the Issaquah School District Administrative Office. We have a boardroom. That's where we meet. And so we will potentially make a decision at that November 12th meeting, but we will not be making any decisions tonight.
Thank you, Marnie. Before I get started, I just want to thank the staff here at Maywood Middle School for hosting us tonight. I don't know if you've all been to this facility or not. You know, we did a major renovation on this facility that just completed it in the last year or so. And I think it's gorgeous, and I just love it, and I love the way that the staff and the kids are taking care of this great facility here. I'd also like to thank our guests from the State Board, Connie and Peter. Thank you for coming out. And, of course, all of our families and community members who have come out tonight to learn about the new State of Washington graduation requirements. You should know that annually the ISD School Board discusses and approves graduation requirements for the next year's incoming freshman class. So what we're talking about here tonight is the class of 2019, those students that are currently in the eighth grade. This specific conversation started, as Marnie said, during our October 15th board meeting work study session just prior to the board meeting. The board continued the conversation during the October 29th board meeting when they adopted the new Core 24 graduation requirements for Issaquah High and Skyline, and then scheduled this special board linkage meeting. Linkage is a term that policy governance board use when they come out to the community and link with their community, scheduled this meeting to further discuss the Liberty High School grad requirements and provide more information, opportunities for input to the Liberty service area. I want to be really clear about one thing, that this conversation is not about changing or doing anything to the Liberty High School 4x4 8-period schedule. That conversation was held a couple of years ago, and we've moved on from that. That is the schedule. That's the schedule the staff plans from. And I know there's been some concern out in some of the Liberty community that that's what this was about. But it really is not about that. It's simply about graduation requirements. The board staff and I have approached this conversation strictly as grad requirements. A matter that was driven by a change in state grad requirements, and as I said, this is something our board does annually every year. When we met during the October 15th board work study, the staff displayed a few 32-credit Liberty High School options based on the idea of schedule utilization, which we felt was consistent with our other two comprehensive high schools. To kind of put it simply, if you're on a 6-period day, and you have 4 years, 6 times 4 is 24. So we just took the 8-period Liberty schedule, times it by 4, and came up with 32. Our thinking was to have the students take maximum advantage of the course opportunities available to them. But it's really up to the board to decide what they want the grad requirements to be. They have to meet the minimum standards set by the state. So the staff, as Director Moraldo said, is here tonight. We anticipated a lot of questions. We want to be able to respond to questions. A number of people have provided written input to myself and the board, which has been very helpful. Thank you for that. And so that we'll be able to address those questions. And one of the things, initially, we thought we would start with some kind of a presentation, but then we thought, well, better to just kind of hear the questions and hear from the state board, and then the staff and myself will respond as necessary to questions either from the audience or from the board. So if we want to, I think next up would be the State Board.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great, thanks.
Thank you so much for...
You're going to have to talk into the mic, Connie.
It's not on.
How's that?
No.
I don't think it's on.
We have our tech support coming over here.
He'll fix it.
All right, great. Thank you very much. Thanks so much for coming out tonight. Parents play an essential role in guiding their children in the selection of courses over the years. We'll get into that a little bit more, but thank you very much for being here, and thank you to the school board for inviting us. Peter and I really enjoy getting out to the communities. Of course, this is my own stomping grounds. I had two children that went through Maywood and Liberty, and also were there when we did have the block schedule. So we lived through that, and I think it was a great advantage for their education. I'll bet most of you don't have a clue what the State Board of Education is. Our mission is to lead the development of state policy for K-12 education, provide effective oversight for public schools. This is just hold it. We'll give it a shot. Let's try this and see if you can hear me now. Can you hear me now? Great, thank you. Anyway, so the State Board sets policy for the K-12 education system in the state of Washington. We advocate for quality education for all kids, and we provide effective oversight for the public school system. So what specifically does that mean? So some of the things that we're involved in are student achievement goals for the state of Washington. This was you'd think that was something that we would have been doing all along, but it's actually quite a new initiative that the state legislature asked us to take on. And so it's a way of measuring how successful all the schools are, how the education system is doing across the state of Washington. We'll be reporting on that to this legislative session. It's school recognition and accountability, how are individual schools and how are districts doing. It's developing and supporting policies that close the achievement gap, which is, of course, on our minds a great deal. It's ensuring, and this is where tonight comes in, ensuring that all students have an opportunity for a quality career and college preparation program through the 24 credits. It's setting cut scores for state assessments, and also graduation assessments. The new Common Core is coming online. We'll be having a new test this spring that we'll be using from here on out called the Smarter Balance. It's a consortium of states that have gotten together, so we use a common assessment. And one of the things we'll be doing this year is deciding whether or not the common cut score, what's passing and what's not, will be used for graduation requirements for the state of Washington. So it's going to be an interesting conversation we'll be having very soon. Ensuring that that districts are in compliance with basic education requirements. And we also have a new role to play in charter schools. Some of the charter schools are authorized by local school districts, only one so far, Spokane, but we have a responsibility to oversee their administration of charter schools there. So, as Ron said, we're not here tonight to talk about whether or not the eight credits is an appropriate way of doing things in your district. You already made the decision. And we're also not going to be talking about the definition of a credit. Defining the credit is clearly up to the local school district. But we do want to talk about what the new requirements are and give you a little more information on that. So the purpose of the revised graduation requirements is to better prepare students for life after high school in gainful employment, post-secondary education, and citizenship. And while students need core knowledge to be productive, engaged citizens, they also need opportunities to pursue post-secondary pathways that align with their interests and their passions that lead to careers. So what's it look like? Why have graduation requirements at all? Well, first of all, there's equity. All children in the state of Washington should have an equal opportunity. If the requirements are different, too different from community to community, some kids may be prepared and others won't be. Preparation. The state of Washington is one of five states in the country that have the highest percentage of jobs that require post-secondary education. So this is really important to us to have a rigor in our education system. and competition. We all have heard so much about international competition and competition among states for industries and the good jobs. We want to make sure that our students are prepared for that. So our guiding principles, when we were forming this, and we've been at this for a long time. I came on the state board in 2009, and a good share of the work on the 24 credits had already been done by that time. So this has taken a long time. There's been a lot of deliberations on this. It's gone through the legislature a couple of different times. It finally got passed this year. First of all, one of the guiding principles is that there are foundational course credits that define basic education. So there are certain courses that kids should take in order to make sure that they've got the basics that they need. The second thing is that STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, is really important in the 21st century. And it's especially important in the state of Washington, where so many of the jobs that we have and will be having in the future are so dependent on knowledge in those areas. We also believe that electives are very important, that kids need the ability to explore and to grow and to make individual selections based on their own perception of who they are and what their interests are and what their abilities are. We also believe that the high school and beyond plan is the foundation for all course-taking decisions. How many of you have been involved in the development of your high school and beyond plan for your students already? A few of you. That's good. This is something that we believe needs to be starting in middle school, because what you're doing is you're setting up the coursework that will be taken throughout a student's high school years. And that takes a lot of conversation. Your child's interests may be very different in eighth grade than they will be as a senior. So we want to make sure that they're prepared, not only giving an opportunity to have them explore various subjects, but we all also want to make sure that they're really prepared for whichever direction they head in by the time they're seniors. And finally, that the high school and beyond plan should identify post-secondary pathways. You ought to know what you're working toward. The student ought to know what they're working toward so that they've got the appropriate credentials when they finish. So at a minimum, now these things are, the post-secondary pathway is really a local decision. But there are two things we think are really important. One, in that sense that each child should be prepared to do either to go after a professional technical certificate or degree, or attend a four-year, be prepared to go to a four-year college. So that's what the 24 credits were based on, is preparing students for whichever direction they take. So we took a look at this. The 24 credits were important to us because there was some data that really stuck out at us. And one is that right now, students that are recent graduates that are attending two-year community colleges and technical schools, 50% of them are taking remedial math. Remedial math means that they've got to take a class in community college that they can't get credit for in order to prepare them for credit-bearing courses. So that means that they're not getting any credit for that, and you're spending money on it. And this is true for four-year colleges as well, but the numbers don't look quite as dire when you combine as this slide does. This is just community colleges. But it's about 38% if you take a look at the kids that are going combined four-year kids with the two-year kids. It's still very, very difficult. And some kids have to take both English language arts and math as remediation. So that's really, really tough. Something else that we found out when we did a study in 2008 of what kids were actually taking, and that's that 35% of them were not taking the full load. Well, no wonder kids are going to college unprepared if they're not taking advantage of every opportunity that they have to take rigorous coursework. So this is really important to us that kids take advantage of every single opportunity that they have. This is the last chance that they're going to have for a free public education, and they need to take full advantage of it. there were also kids that were graduating that were not prepared for entrance into a four-year school. A lot of them, half of them, were not prepared. And so that's when we talk about the additional language arts, world language credits that will be in, that are included in the 24 credits. That's why that's so important, because that tends to keep kids from going to a four-year school. They can go to a two-year school without world language, but they can't go to a four-year school in the state of Washington. So this is they have to have the right kind of background. They have to plan out their schedule so that they've got the right kind of qualifications when they start applying for schools. So here's what it looks like. There's two columns. There's requirements for the classes for 2016, 17, and 18. And then there's the ones that will kick in 2019 and beyond. The reason that 2019, that most of the new requirements are included there is because that's the date that we're projecting that the state legislature will fully fund basic education. And you're probably aware of the McCleary decision and the pressure that's being put on the legislature to fully fund basic education. So the students that are starting as freshmen in 2015, they'll be the first class that will actually have to have all 24 credits on a 6-period day. So there are some differences. One is that there is an additional science requirement, and one of which, so a total of two science requirements have to have labs with them. And the definition of a lab, we can get into later, but it's, I think that we've got wonderful facilities in the Issaquah School District. And I have to tell you, going all over the state now, we need all over the state for the State Board of Education. And nobody can touch the Issaquah facilities. They are first rate. And especially if you take a look at the science labs. They are wonderful in our district. And thank you, voters. Thank you, voters. Thank you, voters. another one of the changes is the arts credit. We bumped it up from one arts credit to two. And the reason for this was because of the importance of creativity. How do you foster creativity in a child? I think that we as parents know from little on up there are certain things that get kids excited. But when you're thinking about as an education system, how can we foster creativity, that really has been the difference that makes the difference between an American worker and others throughout the world, is our ability to be creative and innovative. How do you do that? Well, one of the things that we thought we could do is to increase the art credits. And it could be performing arts, visual arts, but that was one attempt to try to enhance that creativity in kids. And then the world language credits, the two credits, as I said before, you need two credits of the same world language for admission to four-year colleges in the state of Washington. Now, these can be substituted. If you know your student is not going to a four-year school, has no interest in taking a world language, those can be substituted for something that's more appropriate for their career path. And the same thing for the second credit of art. So we really have built in as much flexibility as we can to make sure that the career, the pathway that's set for that student really sets them up well for what they want to do, while also recognizing that lots of kids change their mind over that period of time, from eighth grade to the time that they're seniors. And I've sat through so many exit interviews with kids when they're presenting their culminating project or their reflections on their education as seniors. And there's a whole lot of them that are missing the credits they really should have because their direction has changed. So that's really why we're setting it up so that they can be qualified to get into a four-year school if that's what they choose, but also provides lots of flexibility for them to explore career opportunities, technical programs, and so forth. So this was, I spent a lot of time at Olympia, and I spent a lot of time lobbying, because I really enjoy it. But this was a big win last year when 6552 was passed, and so it actually put into law the 24 credit requirements for the class of 2019. It put in some other kinds of things, too, a little more flexibility,
but they put $97 million more in for guidance counselors, materials, and labs, and that sort of thing. We know it's not enough, but hopefully by the time that the McCleary decision is fully implemented, the basic education is fully implemented, these will be handled. The session before that, in 2013, the legislature required an additional 80 hours. So the number of hours that that schools are required to provide for high school students is now 1,080. So we're bumping that up. The legislature's expectation is that kids will be spending more time in school, because their expectation is that they will fully participate in all of those 24 opportunities, in the case of Liberty, all 32 opportunities that they have throughout their high school year.
Can I ask a question?
I'm going to tell you the time.
So, how do requirements add up?
Do you mind if a board member asks a question?
Yes, please do.
Connie, thank you. Going back to the 24 credits, so...
Go back,
because the 24 credits is what was in law, and yet you've been talking about taking full advantage of opportunities. So why then didn't the law or your rules come out to say not 24 credits, but say based on the number of classes offered per year times the number of years would be the credit requirement required of in high school? How come it wasn't structured that way?
I don't know, Brian. I don't have a clue.
Okay, but
Peter,
It wasn't structured that way. It was structured as 24 as a number, and I guess that's the gloss that you were bringing to it. Question I wanted to hear about why it wasn't, if it was about opportunities,
yes,
versus a minimum number of credits we think kids need to have in order to have a meaningful diploma. Why wasn't it structured the other way?
So I also don't know the answer exactly because I wasn't on the board. Maybe I wouldn't know anyway. But one thing that I've learned is that across the state, there are lots of different ways of organizing high schools and so forth. And so as a state board, the rules have to fit all districts. And I suspect that that's the reason.
There was, in 2008, there was a study done by the State Board of Education, it's contracted to the Burke Group, that did take a look at the block scheduling compared to a standard schedule and what the impact would be on graduation requirements or kids prepared to graduate. And it really, that study showed that there was really very little difference, but it didn't, but the State Board didn't work on that translation of what the 24 credits would be in a block schedule. So basically, there are 17 core credits. Those are the things that we believe constitute basic education, the most basic education. Can you see that? Four credits of English, three math, three science, three social studies, one career and tech education, two health and fitness, two arts, one of which can be traded for a personal pathway requirement preference. And then the two world languages, again, both of those can be traded out for a more appropriate career pathway course if that's really what your child wants to do. There are four electives, and that equals 24. One thing I want to mention is I called it grace. We were told over and over again that there are kids that just really, really, really struggle. And how are they, if they're having a hard time complying with the credit requirements that we have now, how are they going to do it when we up it to 24? And so we put in the flexibility to waive up to two credits. Now, our intent was that kids would be earning at least those 17 core credits. Those are most important. So if a kid fails in math, for instance, it was our expectation that they would take it over and take a different math course so that they would still get three math credits. The legislation that was passed this year really leaves it up to the local districts, and local districts will have a policy. So if you've got a student that has unusual circumstances, the district can approve a policy and administer it on a consistent basis across the district that addresses that issue for those kids that really struggle.
There's a lot of school choice in here. I think I've talked about that most of the way, the flexibility that's built in, personal pathway credits, and then the four electives. Science is changing because we're requiring not only one more credit, but also two lab sciences. Math really is changing. When we started this, we believed that Algebra 2 was the gold standard. It was an entry, it was a gateway course. That if you took Algebra 2, the world was open to you. If you didn't take Algebra 2, some of those pathways were blocked to you. You would really have to do more remedial work or go back and retake it or something. Over time, though, we've really learned more about what the math requirements are for various kinds of professions. And we've come to the conclusion that there are some math courses that are more appropriate. For instance, I've got somebody in our family that is a senior, and she wants to be a history teacher. And while she's perfectly capable of taking calculus, she wants to take statistics because she'll be using that more than she would calculus in her chosen path. It's not going to make a difference in terms of where she goes to college. It's just a more appropriate math course for her. We're also doing a lot of cross-crediting, making sure that there, for instance, a voc educational program that fully includes the essentials in math would be more appropriate for somebody that maybe learns more hands-on basis. And there are a lot of kids that really struggle with math. If they have less theoretical and more hands-on, they learn better. So we're working on those options for both science and math that the OSPI is developing that right now. But anyway, there's more flexibility in algebra or in the math credit so that it can really match where a student wants to go professionally and career-wise. The high school and beyond plan, as I mentioned before, is really, 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 really important. For you to be starting to work with your student now, explore a bit various kinds of careers, give them some experiences, and really watch them when they're planning that freshman year, all 4 years actually of high school, what classes are that they should be taking that will prepare them for whichever pathway they want to take. Competency-based credit, this is something I think is so exciting. There's another way of getting a credit, and that's that proving you already have proficiency in that. The big one for this was the realization that there's a whole lot of kids in our schools now that are English language learners and that were raised with a primary language, that they can show that they are competent in that and get a world language credit out of it. Sometimes many. Some of the school districts like Tukwila, my goodness, they've got so many different languages there, and a lot of the South King County districts are providing a little extra help. They're providing a class that fills in the gaps between, for instance, a Spanish speaker and somebody who can actually read and write in Spanish as well. And it's really making a huge difference for those kids. They're getting world language credits for that in a relatively short period of time. And it's really freeing up time in their schedule then to help cover the gaps and the things that they may be struggling with if they have to take additional coursework in. So that's a really good thing. And it's really open to the school district how many things have been certified. So that's it. That's what I had.
Great. Thank you. And there's information if you have any questions regarding what the State Board has presented tonight and how to contact them. So this was a long process. I remember back before I was on the board, this was the topic of discussion about how to get to 24 credits for our students to have a meaningful high school diploma. So with that, you wanted to go to the questions. So Mr. Cooper, could you bring me the questions? I wanted to first ask if the board had questions for the State Board members.
She's ready to do that.
Yeah, Paula, could you I wanted you to display the slide that would show what would be the minimum we would have to change of Liberty High School to get into compliance with the new state grad requirements.
Take my shoes off.
No.
Don't do that.
No, no, don't do that.
Do we need tech support again? So, Paula, would you kind of just walk us through a little bit what we're looking at here so it's clear to everybody in the audience?
Speak into the microphone.
And, yeah, use the microphone for the podcast, please.
So the first row that you see shows current requirements for the class of 17 and 18. So 15 and 16 are at 28 credits, but 17 and 18 are at 29.5, and that shows the areas that they are in. When you look at the next row, the next two actually, it shows the additions that have to be made are in yellow. So we have to go from one fine or applied art to two. We'll take the first row first. So you can choose that path, which is two fine arts, the two world language. You'd have in the Liberty schedule six electives. And then you would continue with the senior core elective and the senior general elective, which are currently in place. The next one where it says or refers to the personal pathway that the state board was talking about. And that, if you look, says you can trade out the two fine arts for one fine or applied art plus one personal pathway. You can trade your world language for two personal pathways. And then of your electives, four of those should be in your personal pathway. And so I just noted it as four plus two to sort of call them out separately.
Okay. Just highlight the total doesn't change.
Yeah, and then you'll notice the total doesn't change. It stays at the current 29.5.
Right. So what we basically did was, if you see the first row where there's no world language or personal pathway, those were just taken from the general electives and moved into the other areas.
So this schedule would put you in compliance with the new state graduation requirements. Okay,
so I'm going to go through some of the questions. This one I'm not quite sure. So the question is, to meet new requirements, students must use or take from electives, right? I think that is still part of the board discussion as to what happens. So with this proposal, with keeping it at 29, there is a little bit of a switch between going from nine electives, one of which needs to be a senior core, one that needs to be a senior elective, down to six, because those other two electives, it has to be two in fine arts or a personal pathway, and it has to be two in a world language or two in a personal pathway. So in essence, yes, in this version, it would be taking and kind of defining what those electives would be. So kind of.
Would you mind defining?
explain what a senior core elective is?
It means that in their senior year, they have to take an elective that is in a core class like English, math, science, or social studies. Or world language. So one of those that falls into that core academic. So we still want them to be taking some of their electives their senior years that's more rigorous.
Marnie, can I add something? Just to be clear on what Marnie said, it would change the elective requirement for graduation. However, at a 29.5 requirement, a student could always choose to take another 2.5 electives. They just wouldn't be required for graduation.
Okay, next question. If the definition of a credit is up to the district and students can transfer between schools, what is the district's definition of a credit? And I think this might be a question that is several different components. So I think that's a really big question of, especially with two high schools that have a different schedule, what is the district's definition of a credit?
All of our schools, if it's a credited class, we have very few that are uncredited, whether it be at Liberty High School or Skyline. I'm going to use the example of biology. So if you take a biology class at Liberty High School, for a year-long class, you would earn one credit, and it would be the exact same thing at Skyline High School or at Issaquah High School as well. But specifically, the question refers to, okay, so what do you do if you've got a kid who's been at Liberty and they're in this 29.5 credit world or vice versa, they're at Issaquah High in the current 22, and they transfer to one of the other schools. And that's where it gets a little bit more complicated. And you have to also think we have kids that come to us from other states as well. So, Paul, I'm going to ask you if you could talk a little bit about what does a counselor do? So let's just say I'm in the counseling office, the registrar. Somebody shows up and says, hey, we're from Liberty High School. We recently moved. And I should be clear, really the only way to do that in our system is by moving. We do have a transfer process, but the vast, vast majority of our students attend the high school that is in their attendance boundary area. What do you do with that? What would you do if that student was coming from Issaquah High to Liberty or Liberty to Issaquah High? How's that managed in the counseling office?
Sure.
So we can get that registered.
And I asked Dr. Almy that he might join us because he might know some nuances that I do not. But
If they're not aware, Dr. Almy is the principal of Liberty High School, the current principal of Liberty High School. Thanks for joining us tonight, Josh.
One important thing is, as you see here, credits are in particular areas. So it is feasible that a student could transfer due to moving from Liberty to Issaquah High School, have 26 credits, but not have the correct credits to graduate. So if they had gone heavy, for instance, early on in electives, they would still need a senior English. They would still need, there are certain classes that they have to fulfill. But as Superintendent Feely said, a credit is a credit. So a biology credit is a biology credit. That transfers straight across. Going from a lesser to a greater, and that's where I'm going to ask Josh to share a little of that, I think you would go through the same process of looking for specific graduation requirements, but they're also, you would need to be taking into consideration, is the student a senior and only has so many options to get those credits in? You'd look for the things they absolutely had to take, and then I think you would need and you can probably speak to that more than I would know specifically personally. But the important thing is the idea of the requirements. So there are credits and there are electives, but there are requirements that are the key things. And I believe when Connie Fletcher was talking about it, she talked about those foundational things that you have to have. Those are the pieces that you really need to have.
The only thing that I would say is that we have a formula that we transfer credits from a 6 to an 8 period day. A lot of times it doesn't work out cleanly. There may be a student that needs, you know, a quarter credit or something like that. You know, in those cases when the transfer of credits don't line up exactly with a half credit, which is a semester class, we might waive them. You know, it happens occasionally, but we have a formula that my counselors would explain to you in much better detail than I could. But we do have a formula that would transfer the credits from a six-period day to an eight-period day, and also vice versa. The student would transfer from Liberty to one of our six-period day high schools. So it's normally not an issue. There's a few sticky points sometimes that we have to waive some quarter credits and whatnot when it doesn't work out cleanly. Usually it does, but sometimes it doesn't, and we're usually able to take care of it.
I might note, too, that the current law as it relates to high school grad requirements give the individual principal a lot of flexibility on what they can waive. The new law is a lot tighter on that. I think you heard Connie mention that there's only two and they can't be in that core area. That's not the current law, so it does give a little bit more flexibility. But I would also say the goal of the high school, whenever a student comes in, whether it be from out of state or from just another neighboring district or even within our district, is to do what's right by the student. If they've been taking the classes, if we can go through their transcript and they are meeting those core requirements, as Paula said, they do have to meet all of those, we're going to work with them because our goal is to get those students a meaningful diploma. We don't want to punish a student because their family had to move or something like that. So I know this happens. Sometimes you have to waive things, like if a student comes from out of state, maybe they don't have Pacific Northwest history, but you look at their transcript and they came from Montana and they had Montana state history. So you might, you know, you have some flexibility in how you would manage that.
Ron, we kind of went into transfers being the focus of the question, but I want to bring it back to the idea, is a credit a credit? Mm-hmm. Which I think you answered really clearly that it is. So if you look at 29.5, that's a higher credit requirement than any other high school, even under the new Core 24 that we have at Issaquah and Skyline. I think that was the mm-hmm. core of the question.
Yeah, and obviously the likelihood if a student came from a school like Liberty with more opportunities and higher credits and they transferred to one that was lower, there's a greater likelihood that they would be able to waive a class in their senior year or graduate early even. It's every one of these is going to have to be looked at on a case-by-case basis, so I think that's really part of it. But again, just to reiterate, from our perspective, where you take that high school credited course in our system doesn't really matter to us. The credit is a credit.
Now, there's a question out there in the audience, but you want to go through it? How do you want to do that?
And we'll have a public comment period. Did you have a question regarding just this issue, Kim? Connie, did you hear that question? Would you
want
to answer that?
I'll repeat it. I didn't quite hear it. So the pathway.
Well, I can speak to part of it.
I was going to say I could too.
Go ahead.
The personal pathway requirement is to provide students flexibility. So let's say there's a student who doesn't want to go on to a four-year school. So when they look at the requirements and see 2 years of world language, that doesn't really apply. It isn't required for them because they're not going on to a four-year school if they've made that determination. So they could make a choice to take those courses in some sort of a vocational subject that is more meaningful to their path, right? Whatever that might be. So for the two credits of the world language and one in the fine arts could be defined through their high school and beyond plan to be more in line with where they're headed, right? And for kids that are headed more toward a four-year school, they need those 2 years of world language and preferably in the same subject, right, in the same French, if that's what you're taking, so that the four-year school would take that into consideration.
The only
thing I need to ask Paula about, though, is on this electives. I've never seen it described as being two electives and four personal pathways. The only reason I noted it that way, and it could be noted other ways, is in Core 24, it is listed as four in your personal pathway. That's the only reason it was called out. If you look through when Connie gave the thing of the choices, the seven personal pathway credits are the four electives, two that you take from world language and one that you take from fine art.
Right, because that's their nomenclature for elective is simply personal pathway.
No. Actually, these are the ones that are really weighed depending on your path. The default should be the two world languages and the two credits of art. But if you're clearly not going to a four-year school, that's not in your vision, then this is really developed around skill centers, making sure that kids who wanted to attend a skill center could get all those credits in, that they could go a half a day to those programs and still meet the basic requirements to graduate on time. That's what that was for. That's why, as parents, you really need to be watching this stuff when you're helping them developing their high school and beyond plan and make sure that they're getting the right things in there. But we do have enough flexibility that will let a child who is clearly going to a vocational path get that additional training, some of which may end up with a certification at the high school level.
And I think would it be more accurate, Connie, to say it's actually trying to point out choice?
Yes.
More than anything else.
Yes.
But that's a
yes.
point of choice for folks,
okay.
for kids.
I guess that's what I was trying to have you guys clarify. I think pathway, I think focus on the direction. So from the standpoint of what you're saying that really they can take two electives and then they can take any other four electives that they want to take on top of two electives. So
they're different in the sense that there really was preferred choice here, which was world languages, which would get a kid into a college pathway, college, given that ability to get it admitted. Whereas if you don't take those world languages, it would be very difficult. You'd have to go a different route.
Right. So like whatever pathway you choose that you want to have your child take or your child wants to take, and it's not a requirement from the standpoint that, like, let's say they get in a DECA, they take it for 2 years, they decide they don't want to take it.
No.
Are you asking more of the question, are we going to prescribe what a pathway means? And the answer is no. Is that more the question? Like, are we going to say if you choose this pathway,
no.
you do all of these?
No. What I'm asking is if you're saying four personal pathways, so the child can stay in certain pathways.
I think it should maybe, best defined as choice.
Okay,
perfect. That makes sense.
Okay, thank you.
The personalized is more important than the pathway.
Thank you, Peter. And I'm going to refrain from future questions out in the audience because I just realized that we podcast this, so none of what was just asked by the participant is on the podcast, so that's really confusing. So I'm going to read through the questions I have, and then we'll have it the time of additional comments and or questions. So the next question is, as long as Liberty has an eight school periods, students have been able to earn their full 32 credits in 4 years. Many students already successfully pass all their classes, so raising the total number of credits to 32 would have no added benefits for these students. But what is the benefit of raising the total number of credits for those who struggle in school and have a difficult time passing their classes? What would be the benefit of forcing Liberty students to earn 30% more credits than their counterparts at Issaquah and Skyline?
Do you want me to take a stab at that?
I think that's a good one.
Well, what I can say is, again, what we, as I said in my opening remarks, we were looking for more utilization, I guess, of the eight-period day. We have another slide we can show you that one of the issues is if you're below the minimum, or if you're below the maximum, in this case 32, You can end up in a scenario, and this was played out much more a few years ago, and I can speak to kind of the cultural changes that Dr. Almay and the staff at Liberty have been embarking on, is that you can end up with a situation where in their senior year they're not even attending a full day. So if you look at this slide, you can see that If you look on the bottom tiles and for Liberty High School, by the senior year, you could have a student who doesn't take a first or fourth period in their senior year, and then even in one semester, they could actually not take a first, a fourth, and even a second or a fifth period class as well. Our goal was to have kids use the schedule, because I know when there was a community conversation about the schedule, I think, and I can't speak for the board, but I was in all of those meetings, one of the things that we heard repeatedly from the community was what they love about their schedule is that it gives all these opportunities for kids to take all these other courses. In the question, it was noted, too, that we do have students, a growing number of students, I would point out, which I'm really happy about, that are taking advantage and graduating, having taken 32 credits while in high school. Frankly, we have kids who are coming up bringing some high school credits from middle school as well. It's true, and I think I even heard Connie talk about, you know, there is some concerns about struggling students, and as a system, you know, we have to put supports in place for kids. Whenever the standards raise, and in my 27-year career, I've seen the standards kicked up several times now, you know, there's always that concern, are we going to be leaving more kids behind by raising the standard? So when I think about all the different things that we do and have implemented as a system over the years to be a safety net for a student who maybe failed a course or is struggling in the course or needs to slow down a little bit. And it could be for a variety of reasons. So you're probably familiar with like after-school homework support, with our Knight Academy courses, in our six-period day schools where they don't have as many options, we've put optional seventh-period. Of course, it comes at the end of the day, so it conflicts with kids who have jobs or athletic teams. But we do have over 300 students a semester at those two schools taking advantage of that. Online courses have grown dramatically over the last several years. We have lots more kids taking advantage of that. We recently upped the amount of online credits that a student could have and still earn an Issaquah school diploma. So we've been working hard. And one of the nice things, if you look, our grad rate really hasn't moved. And it hasn't gone down as those standards have gone up. And in fact, over time, our grad rate has actually gone up. We have sat between 90 and 92% as a grad rate, which, you know, I'm happy to say is usually in the top two or three grad rates in the entire state. And so, you know, it does concern us whenever we raise the standards. But I believe that all the students, those who really want to fly high and take as many classes as they can, and they're striving for an Ivy League school, or the struggling student deserves all we can give them to get them over the bar. And these are more meaningful diplomas than the diploma I earned, you know, 30-some years ago. The requirements are much greater. I have two daughters who are in college now. They went through our system like this, a neighboring system. And it has increased. The rigor has increased. But as Connie mentioned too, a lot of things have changed out there. The nature of the workforce, global competitiveness. So we're just, we try to do the best with catching those kids. If the standards go up, we put more things in place to capture them. But we also like to provide lots of opportunities, especially for, we have a lot of really high performing, high flying kids out there. They're taking advantage of it. We have some data that we've been watching that shows the utilization of the Liberty schedule has increased. But what I mean by that is more and more kids are taking full advantage of eight periods all day, every day, for 4 years. And I think that's a really positive trend. You notice, or Paula referenced, the grad requirements were raised a couple of years ago at Liberty from 28 to 29.5. Again, with the idea of greater utilization of those opportunities that are free to the students, that they can take advantage of, that will hopefully better prepare them for their life post-high school. But I have to say, as I look at what caused that, it's been the work of Dr. Almy and his staff really creating a culture at Liberty High School that values taking advantage of the schedule, being better prepared, And they've offered some great courses where in the past a senior might have said, for example, you know, I'm going to take a waiver in my senior year, and now there's a course where they can do SAT prep. And so they stay, and they take the course, and we've seen an improvement in SAT scores as well. So the credit, those kinds of things that are happening in the building, I think are really making some really positive, significant impacts on Liberty. I don't know if that got
entirely to the question.
Can I just mention too, Superintendent Healy, that if you think about, if you look at that bottom section, and you think about wanting, I mean, I have six kids of my own, wanting your kids to have all the opportunity and try things, and realizing that with the two-credit waiver, should your student be one who struggles, you're kind of at about the same place with that bottom section. And so it's really, sometimes it causes a lot of, but then when you think, okay, really it would mean let them try all of the opportunities they have, but there are, like Superintendent Thule said, safety nets for them should that be really, really difficult.
The next question is similar, but it's a little bit different. Please explain why Liberty has higher credit requirements than the other Issaquah high schools. And this was a discussion about 2 years ago that the board had when Liberty kept its 8 periods. And you'll see why, you know, the graduating class of 2014 and 15 have 28 credits, and we bumped that up for the class of 2017 and beyond, or excuse me, 15 and 16 have 28 credits. 2017 and beyond, we bumped it up to 29.5 credits. And what that did was it equated the amount of time, the percentage of time of your options of class. So out of 100%, if you took all the classes, we wanted it to be equal amount of time required to graduate. So out of 24 credits at Skyline and Issaquah equated to approximately 29.5 out of 32 credits, so that it was the equal amount of time required, and it was much more about time of day required to graduate as opposed to credits. And that's how we got there and increased those credit requirements 2 years ago.
I'll also add, though, that when we look at it 2 years ago, there was some data to show a lot of, like Ron was saying, a lot of seniors were taking advantage of the fact that they already had credits in place. So there was a little bit of that as well, which is to encourage that. But you know, the other part, which Ron mentioned, is the work that Dr. Olmey's been doing around the culture of taking full advantage for those kids that want to.
Right, and on that note, I mean, taking advantage of the culture, we only would be helping them take more, embrace that more by moving the graduation requirements up and ensuring the utilization of the 4x4 schedule. I mean, it provides terrific flexibility. That's what the people wanted. That's awesome, but they need to use it.
And many kids are, you know, and again, a class is a class, so many of these kids are embracing that with 8 classes, which, as we've said, it's a higher load than 6 classes in the other schools because a class is a class. And so.
Right, and to that, it's a choice. It's a choice to have the 4x4, and it's a fabulous choice for the opportunities. From my perspective, they're wonderful opportunities, so let's use them.
Okay, so the next question is, since Liberty High School already has higher core requirements than at Issaquah High or Skyline, how is this increase to be equitable?
I think, again, the concept of equity is a little funny here. There's 2 arguments. There's a class is a class, a credit is a credit, and there's the argument for utilization of the school day. So if you want to go on the side of a class as a class, then yes, Liberty has more credit requirements. If you want to talk about utilization of the school day, it would be comparable. So it's simply how you look at it. There's 2 different ways to look at it.
It should be noted that the school day is the same length. And
The school day is the same length, which is what Dr. Thiele was saying. And the other thing that we've made really good progress, and I'm going to compliment Dr. Thiele on this, is Ron Thiele, is At Skyline and Issaquah, there are more opportunities. It's not a full seven period option for those kids, but there are many more options to take a seventh class than there were in the past. So yeah, I'm glad to see that there are a lot of more options for those high school kids now than there were when my daughter was there. And so even the idea of utilization, and part of it is what's the, you could do the pure math and say there's 8 opportunities per year times 4, 6 core opportunities in the other 2 high schools times 4, plus maybe some other 7 options. But really, there's, I don't think we're going to get to a place where it's actually the same, because we're doing things to make it the best opportunity for those kids when there's actually a different schedule. And so I don't think we're ever going to say, let's make it the same in both cases. It's different. And, I was one person who voted not to change Liberty's block schedule, really because of the outpour of the community, past alumni students and current students and talking about the richness. But I cast that vote with the understanding that a class is a class. And so, because that was really important. And so part of what I'm expecting Dr. Almy to be continuing to do is to ensure that a class is a class. And that might mean for some for some classes like AP Physics, it might mean that there might be some other utilization of the class time. So what's shown as a white box there, maybe that's an impromptu collection of kids in AP Physics who are doing some things extra to deal with the fact that class is the same regardless of where it's taken in the district. And so again, the idea of equity being equal, I just don't think that's going to be helpful, because there will always be differences.
Yeah. I did want to, as we were talking, it made me think of something, because some of the questions that have come in have asked about currently, for example, at Liberty, you have a guided study class that about 40% of your freshmen take, which is non-credited. So obviously, if the board made the decision to raise the credits, we'd have to take a look at that. And our thinking would be if this ultimate number goes up, that has to become a credited class. We can turn that into a credited class. And then, just as an example, if the board did go to 32, all of the supports things that we've put in place as a safety net at the other 2 comprehensive high schools, we do the same at Liberty. So I just want to be really clear about that. And I know I didn't mention it that specifically when I talked about the safety net that we try to build underneath and around kids as they're moving through the system. That would all transfer over to Liberty as well if there was an increase.
So, and just to be clear, it would be there would still be, so if it was up to 32 credits, our expectation is that they're still utilizing that full day, taking all 8 of those classes all 4 years, and if there's any point where they fail, they'll still have to take additional time and coursework.
They'd have to do something. There is a up to 2 credit waiver as well. So,
and also that many kids are coming in with credits from middle school.
Yes.
Right, and so they would have those credits also banked.
Yeah, it would be interesting though how many of our struggling students come in.
That's true. Some of them could. You'd have no idea.
A lot of them would come with an algebra elective.
Right. At least one.
The next question kind of goes to the discussion that Brian was talking about with AP classes. Will AP or honors classes be worth more credits? Are there other schools in Washington State running an AP or different program? So the idea that if we feel that AP chemistry is going to require more than the content we can give in a single period throughout the year, at Liberty, could that potentially be a credit and a half class, as an example?
Right. Actually, it might be able to take more time, but not be more credit if you go with the credit as a credit idea, because it's covering the same content that AP chemistry, AP physics is at Issaquah.
Right.
So it may require more time, but it wouldn't be more credit.
That's the way I would. I mean, I don't know the answer off the top of my head, but that I would agree with that analysis of it. You know, and again, a lot of this was discussed a couple of years ago, but there's kind of a trade-off. When you have a 4x48, you get more opportunities, but you spend less time in each individual class. So if you take AP Chemistry at Liberty and AP Chemistry at Issaquah High, you are going to spend less time in your AP Chemistry class, that specific class at Liberty, than you would at Issaquah High. Because they meet every day, you know, it just works out that there's more time over the year. That doesn't matter to us, because you're going to get a credit for AP Chemistry. That's going back to a class as a class. But that is just one of the differences between the schedule, and I think Director Deagle was correct. It's not equal, but we really try to make it fair. And there are lots of other schools around the state. There are some other 4x48s. I say lots. I think the vast majority are probably in traditional six, but they're out there. Some of them have 32 credit requirements.
Right, and actually Federal Way is one school district that has three different high school schedules. They have, and this was even, these are their requirements before the changes in the state law from the state board over going to 24 credits. They have six-period day schedules that have a requirement of 23.5 credits out of 24 to graduate. They have high schools that have 28 credits, and they require 27.5 out of the 28 to graduate from high school, and they have a 4x4 that required 31.5 out of 32. So they have very clearly kept the same expectation of the utilization of their schedules across all of their high schools.
Another part of that same question that somebody said is each Liberty class credit worth the same? And I think this was kind of answered before. Worth the same as Skyline or Issaquah? Can a junior from Liberty with 18 credits only take half a year to graduate? And I think Paula had spoken to that question earlier, that there are certain things that are required, like a full year of senior English or the amount of time required for social studies along with the civics class, that those things would still need to be fulfilled. So unless you could do that within your day, if you were doing something online, you might potentially be able to do that. But at this point, thank you. The next question. With an increase in credit requirements, how will you accommodate a difference in workload between courses? Will students taking multiple AP courses or college in the high school be able to take study periods? Study periods are usually non-credited. So what would happen with something like that? Where I think I was in my senior interviews, I interviewed a young lady who had taken 9 AP in high school in the college in the high school classes. So oftentimes students are using that waiver time, but they're actually using it as study time. So would there be a credited study period time for them?
Well, my just thought is there are a lot of nuances that we would need to think about, but Dr. Almey says he has an answer for that, so I'm going to let him answer. But my thought is that just as we do with any schedule where we find that there are needs that kids have, we do things that help speak to those needs. I think we prefer not to generally get credit for students just studying in a class. Typically, we don't give credit for that. But I think guided studies kinds of classes where students are receiving help for something, they are gaining skills, that kind of thing, I think is a different kind of thing. But that's not a hard and fast rule. That's just a thought off the top of my head.
I was just going to add that right now the guided study program that we run at Liberty High School is a little bit different than what they run at Issaquah High and Skyline High School. Ours, you don't get a credit for it. It is an opportunity to really keep up to pace with your classes and get a lot of work done in a supervised environment and whatnot. Typically freshman, sophomore class. So your kids who are taking AP college and high school courses for the most part are juniors and seniors until the social studies adoption happened this past year. We have AP Geography, different conversation for a different day. But I think there's a bigger question there, though, and no doubt the senior waivers. We do allow seniors now one senior waiver. Years ago, you could have multiple. The only kids who get more than one are on extenuating circumstances. But is it pretty typical for, say, a senior at Liberty High School who has a senior waiver to have multiple AP classes? Absolutely, and most of them do. This is a rigorous college prep high school where the majority of our kids go on to four-year universities after graduation. So our kids are very motivated to get those credits and to take those types of courses. But I think, you know, having lots of AP and college and high school courses as a junior and senior and needing study time for it, I think it also is a different conversation. And we want our kids to sign up for classes that they're passionate about and that they're interested in, but we also want them to be able to balance a workload that balances with their life. And I think that, you know, over the past couple of years, we've really, especially last year, really tried to work with kids and families in looking at their lives and the things that they do outside of school, and how do we balance that with a class schedule that makes sense and it still accomplishes what they want to. So, with 32 credits, if that were to happen, would there be study courses inside the school day? Like Paula said, whenever we see a need, we try our best to address it. I would think that it would have to come somehow in the form of accredited guided study course, though. Right now, guided study at Liberty High School is not accredited.
Understanding that you want to utilize the time during school hours, but what about after school hours? Each class requires homework. Advanced courses require much more. If a student is in leadership or sports, it takes much of their time, extra time. How can they handle the extra credits and the time requirement?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I would say the answer to that question is much like what Dr. Olney just said. That there are kids with rigorous schedules in all kinds of schedules across the state. And it's necessary and incredibly important, and I think we know more and more all the time how important it is. And that's one reason I appreciate the personal pathway and the spelled out credits for college prep, because students need to make choices about living healthy lifestyles, which is sort of what Dr. Olney said, and I think that's all a part of it. That no one is saying somebody must do this, 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 or this. There are personal choices that they can make, and figuring out how to balance that's tricky, whatever schedule kids have, I think.
Okay. And this is something I wasn't even aware of. Somebody asked, would an increase in credit requirements still allow student athletes to graduate early for college? I think that's pretty much up to your parents and you deciding what your pathway is, and the extra means by which to make that happen would probably be online courses, summer schools, and that's something that's probably been planned out from a very early standpoint. So you would just need to plan accordingly to the new graduation requirements. At the last ISD board meeting, there was very much a sense of some board members being punitive about Liberty High School 8 classes. You voted for it now. Can you please explain that and also clarify that there's no room for punitive action here? I don't think that came from me, so I can't really speak to that.
Well, I was there. I don't think any of my colleagues were talking about it in a punitive sense. I think the articulation is what folks have said here tonight, which is with eight periods with an eight period opportunity. Utilizing the full schedule. That was the sense of what I've heard my colleagues say. So I don't think anyone was talking about it as a punishment. It was more about taking full advantage of the opportunity, and there's just a different schedule that allows more opportunity.
That's my take.
I thought this issue was just debated, settled less than a year ago, and that compromise was 29.5 credits. Why come back and change things now? Who is behind this proposed change, and why are there extra core class requirements if one English class at Liberty High School and one English class at Skyline, why require Liberty and have more credits? That's based off of an option that was presented to the board that increased core credit requirements. And I don't know if you have that to be able to share. It is on, if you went to the meeting agenda for last meeting, it's an attachment there. But this is about the credits rather than the discussion about the 8x8. And this conversation came up, again, going back to what we've discussed before about the other two high schools now are required to have 24 credits, which is a full utilization of their day. And just like we bumped up the 29.5 credits to be equivalent when they were at 22, this is under the guise of if they're at now at 24 out of 24, then Liberty should be at 32 out of 32 to fully utilize that day.
Right. I think, right, it's a two-part question. Part is what should the total be, and part should what be the breakdown, right? And some options were presented to us. Some did increase the core subject area credits. I think what I heard from the community was they liked the flexibility because of the number of electives they were able to get out of the 4x4 block schedule. I would prefer to see it implemented in a way that increased the credits as a total, but allowed them to be within an increase of electives. Beyond the, you needed two in fine arts and you needed two in world language, that leaves the rest in electives, and you have this notion of core electives, and taking advantage of that. So I wasn't really in favor of any of the ones that had been presented, but more in the idea of going towards the electives and the core electives.
I believe that was the slide that was presented. So that was where the question was coming from. At the last board meeting, we were supplied some options, one of which is to keep the core classes as they are for the requirements, and just changes to the elective options that would also include requiring world language.
Right.
But those are the options to keep at 32 that we were presented.
Right, except then we realized we really should have a separate line for world language.
Yep.
So,
yes.
Right. So like on the very far right option, which is to leave the other credit levels the same for English, math, social studies, science. We really should have a line that has world language 2 and then changes electives to 10.5, however we might choose to spread them out under the senior core elective or senior general elective or whatever. But the two world language credits should be in there.
Okay, this one is just a statement I wanted to read. Please consider those students who complete all they are asked. Any additional credit requirements must be meaningful and useful for these students. It would cost less for the district to let them graduate a few quarters early and have them work for college more, work for college money. Busy work credits should never be a requirement. And hopefully we're offering classes that aren't busy work. I would say it would be my take on that is at any time, the classes that they're taking should be meaningful classes. And that's part of that high school and beyond plan is getting an idea of where your next course is. And if it is a four-year college, then the classes you're going to be taking will be meaningful towards getting into that college and the work that you'll be doing at that level. And if it's to go to a two-year or to a technical college or into the military, that you will have the opportunity to take courses that are relevant for that career choice. So hopefully we're not giving school classes options that are just busy work for students.
I wanted to comment on the cost part of that, too. And if I get this wrong, I'm going to look over at our CFO. But actually, if a student graduates early, we don't save any money. Our teachers are all on one-year contracts, so they're going to finish out the year anyway. So we're going to be staffed at that level. And actually, we can lose money by students leaving the system early. Because we get reimbursement or apportionment from the state based on the students. We go out and hire the staff. The staff have to stay. If the students go, we're still paying the staff, but we're not receiving the income from the state. So it's not a huge thing. I don't want to overstate it or anything like that. We don't have that many students that graduate earlier that take multiple waivers. But it doesn't save us money, I guess, is the point. Is that correct, Mr.
Cooper? No, it's roughly we get about, say, right around 10,000 per student, state, local, and federal money. So a double waiver senior would cost us about a 0.2 or 50 or about $2,000 for each class of there. So if there's a double waiver, then they would be costing the district about $2,000 in FTE revenue per student. So.
I guess I might just add my perspective. This isn't a money decision at all, though. This is what what's best for our students. So I just want to be clear from our perspective, from my perspective.
One thing to be clear about the eight-period block schedule, I don't think it was ever the district's intent, and probably not parent or student intent either, that because there are more periods in the day, you can get through high school faster. That's not the intent. The intent, and what I think we heard from the community when we discussed the schedule, was the opportunities that it gives to students to explore more electives and find more pathways that are meaningful to them by being able to explore those electives because they have more periods in the day. So we would hope that students would be fully utilizing those opportunities in the same way they're utilizing their opportunities at the other two high schools. I do also just want to say real quickly that right now graduation requirements are 29.5. People have been talking about, oh, you might raise them to 32. There are also options in between those two numbers. So we're not necessarily talking about, is it 29.5, is it 32? It could be any of the whole or half numbers.
Can it be down to 24?
I would hope not. Did have an argument for me there, but we'll move on.
Well, and that's a great segue. The next question, which is almost the last one, the previous credit proposal options of A, B, C, and D are all for 32 credits. Where did the proposal tonight come from? Is the 29.5 proposal that meets Core 24 a new proposal? Actually, it was discussed at our last board meeting, and there was a motion on the table, seconded, and it did not pass. So it did not pass with a 2-3 vote. That failed to keep the 29.5 that was presented tonight. So that's kind of going to be our starting point at our next board meeting, is to go from there, from that discussion. The last question that I have listed here, and then we can go to comments, is how will the public be notified when the school board will be voting? We post all of our board meetings on agendas on the website the Monday prior to a board meeting. We meet the second and fourth Wednesdays in the month of November and in the month of December. We don't meet on that fourth Wednesday because it's typically right around the holidays. So either staff hasn't been in the office to be able to prepare for the meeting, or there's the number of breaks. So we will have, but they're always the second or fourth Wednesdays typically, and it's all posted on our website. And I'm sure most of you are familiar with the Issaquah School District website. Public notices, do they still go in the newspaper?
No, only for public hearings.
Okay, only public hearings now. So that was a recent change. So it will detail what our agenda is. At this point, we are anticipating that we just went through agenda planning, so unless some radical change, we have this on our agenda for the November 12th meeting, which is next Wednesday, 7 p.m. At the district admin offices. And just to let you know, the process in a public meeting, that's where the board does its work. So we do have an agenda, what items we talk about. We do receive public input. That input is relegated to 3 minutes, is what you're given to provide public input per person. And it's input, which is very uncomfortable. It's not going to be like this evening where we've gone through questions. It is very much you can make a comment, but usually the board will not respond, and it is kind of awkward. And if you've ever been to a board meeting, you've kind of seen people come up and they give their public comment, but it's not an interaction. And so that's why we scheduled this, is an opportunity to have an interaction about a decision of this nature. So with that, yes, Peter.
Yeah. So thank you for having us here tonight, and it's great to see all the parent and community members. It's interesting to listen to the questions and to hear the lively interaction between our board members. takes me back when I was on the Seattle board, except no TV cameras here. and no security guards.
That was my
comment. Yeah. Don't miss that. This is obviously an issue that the board and the community has to think about, but I think it may be useful to sort of return to first principles, at least from the state board point of view, of why 24 credits. What was the real purpose here, which is going to drive the state board in the direction, and I think it may be something useful to think about. And that is that the underlying concept or philosophy is that a high school education should be deeper, have more content, and be more challenging for our children, for our kids. And the reason that's important is because, as Connie has laid out, whether they go on to any kind of college or career training or whatever, the environment in the world out there is that kids need to have more than when I went to high school 40 years ago. And there's some interesting numbers that Connie presented in terms of the numbers of kids in two-year colleges and four-year colleges who find themselves not as well prepared as they have to be and therefore have to take remedial courses from the beginning for which they do not get credit. And it's something that I've heard consistently from, and Connie, you can chime in too, from students and around the state, and from my own children too, who are now adults, and that is that many high school students who go on to college, four-year colleges or whatever, find that in retrospect, they wish that more had been asked of them in high school to prepare them better so that they really can have a strong start, and because it's a step up. And that was the direction, that's the push, that's the philosophy behind, I believe, behind the 24 credits. Now, how that actually breaks down at an individual high school in terms of credits and counting and which courses, those are the details that you're struggling with, you're discussing. But I think the direction is clear and one that I think is important.
So with that, I do know that it's already 8:07. I was hoping that we would have until about 8:30, just because you have other things to do in your life than be here. But I did want to open it up to some time for public comment, or if you have additional questions. We have a microphone. This is going to be podcast, so in order for those that want to listen in on this conversation from our website, we would ask that you come up to the podium and speak into the microphone so that any questions that you have or any comments that you have can be heard by all of those that want to hear it on the podcast. So normally I have a sign-in sheet, but I don't tonight. So it's just going to be stand up, go to the mic, if you feel so inclined.
There we go.
My name is Brandy St. Pierre, and I have an eighth grader. So I just wanted to make a distinction between recommending full utilization of 32 credits and requiring full utilization of 32 credits. I think that anytime you have an exception to make for anybody for any reason, it takes the person to ask for the exception and the person to grant the exception. And why put us through this? Why put us through that for whatever reason? I can't see 4 years ahead why we might need an exception, but I'd rather not have to ask, you know? I'd rather build it in and maintain the flexibility as an advantage of having the 32 credits available. And I think if you're successful at 29 and a half, boy, you're doing great.
Meet again under different circumstances. Yay. Leslie Patton, and I have an eighth grader. And my just a comment. So I hear you talk about choice and opportunity, which we all want for our children, but they then fall within a very defined, they fall within very defined walls. When I look at Paula's 4x4 schedule, I see all this room for senior year. And I look back at my senior year. I took the opportunity to go to a community college and to work. And I want my kid to have the same opportunity. we know that seniors get senioritis. And so rather than, and they're thinking ahead at that point, they kind of know their path. And so to have the to have their confines be just within a school day, I'm not sure that I want them to, I feel like their choice is being taken away. So I hope that that's something that you consider as well.
My name is Carrie Granados, and I have a seventh grader here at Maywood. I'm just curious, and I apologize if this was asked at a previous meeting, but what do the educators think? What do the high school teachers think and the high school principals? I haven't heard anything about that tonight.
That I don't know.
Well, one comment I would make is they probably have a myriad of different opinions, because they're all just different individuals. So I can't speak for all of them. I really don't know. I would assume, you know, and listening to the conversation a few years ago about the schedule and things, you know, I'm a former teacher. I certainly wanted kids to be in school and in my classes and in my colleagues' classes, so I always thought that was a good thing. I never really even thought about kids not taking classes and, you know, taking waivers and things like that. That just wasn't part of the world that I was in when I taught. So I don't know. You may get different opinions from a teacher at one high school than you would, you know, maybe a different opinion from a Skyline teacher than you would from a Liberty teacher. It's just really hard for me to say. I don't want to speak for Dr. Almy. I do know, as I said earlier, he and his staff have been working really hard to create a culture within Liberty High School where kids want to take these courses. They want to do much of what Peter was saying. I think that another thing that we struggle a little bit with is, you know, it's the state board's job to set these kinds of expectations and standards for the entire state. Well, we know that, you know, we like to all think of ourselves as being unique, and I would argue that Issaquah is somewhat unique. In that I've heard some comments about students who take 9 AP courses and things like that. I see a lot of that. We have some really high-flying kids who, you know, that's what they want to do. And I don't ever want to, you know, it's interesting. When I came to this district 14 years ago, the criticism of the district was we kept putting obstacles in front of kids for them to be able to do and go as far as they wanted to go. And I believe myself and a lot of my colleagues who have been here over the years in different roles as principals and in the central office, we've really tried to honor that, breaking down those barriers. An interesting thing has happened in the last couple of years. We've eliminated a lot of those barriers. We now have informed self-select. I mean, we're basically saying to kids, take it all, take as much as you can, go try as hard, you know, take the hardest class as you can. And it's been interesting because now, just in the last couple of years, I'm hearing another side of the community saying, it's too much. You know, that we, and you heard Dr. Almy say, you know, we're now having to really engage in conversations with families and kids about, you know, for some kids, it's absolutely appropriate to take a super rigorous AP schedule all the way, and they're headed to the Ivy League. For another student, that might not be appropriate. The challenge we have as a school system is helping families and students balance what happens within that school day and also all of those increasing demands that happen outside of the school day. As I said, I've got 2 daughters in college. I know I've lived the select soccer world. I've lived the drama world. You know, I mean, our kids are very involved, and I think we have to look at them holistically and say, you know, for some kids, doing all of that might be great, but you love this drama over here, so maybe take 1 or 2 less of those AP-type courses. But back to the original question, it's really hard for me to predict what any individual teacher might say. I think, by and large, they would agree with what Peter was saying, that, you know, we want, as educators, we want our kids to be the best prepared kids. I don't want them to have to take remediation classes. And oh, by the way, our remediation numbers are not like those state numbers you saw. ours are much lower. We have a much lower rate of remediation in community college and four-year college than that. So we are doing a good job preparing your kids so they're not having to pay for money for classes that aren't getting them towards graduation. But it, you know, as you can see, a lot of this is pretty complicated. I like to think that we have 19,000 different approaches out there every single day. And we just have to, you know, as much as we can, we try to individualize, but we also have to run a system for everybody.
Kimberly Montague, I have a sixth grader, so I'm still definitely a sixth grader. I just want to remind the school board that when you are looking at all the proposals, and right now I'm looking at least six written proposals for different scheduling options, credit options, keep in mind that as much as we're proud of the fact that we have a lot of overachievers in our district, there's actually more average kids. And so if you look at a proposal that requires five classes of English in 4 years, all you're doing is punishing the average child. That's not what we're about. We're about making our children successful. Success is meeting one class per year, like the state requires, not exceeding that. If you want to require more credits, require them in the electives where our kids get the opportunity to explore. 32 credits with the majority of that being coming out of the electives is fine. 32 credits when you're increasing our core classes that are impossible to meet is not.
Hello, my name is Joan Friel, and I too have an eighth grader, so this does impact my family. I had some things written out. I sent emails to the school board, so it's all written down. But after what I've heard tonight, I'm going to just talk, and if I ramble, I apologize. So looking at this chart that's up here, I'm glad it's up right now. This shows what Liberty has to do to meet the state requirements. We have to have 4 credits of English, 3 credits of math, all down the line, with the exception of the yellow bar, the yellow ones. Okay, we switch an elective over to art, no problem. Add world languages or personal path, whatever. We are meeting the state requirement of 24 credits with this schedule with those changes. I do not understand, and I haven't heard it tonight other than, well, we want to have flexibility in giving kids opportunities to earn 32 credits. They have those opportunities now. They can take a full load. They can pass every single class with 29 and a half. What raising it to 32 will do, I have a struggling kid. I am scared to death that if we go to 32, he will not be able to graduate because he won't pass all his classes. With 29 and a half, there is a flexibility there if he fails one or two. Heaven forbid you do that, but the reality is there are kids that happens with. They still have the opportunity to take 32 credits with our 8-period block schedule, but forcing them to earn every single one, to me, is extreme. We are already meeting the 24 credits required by the state with this schedule. That's my point. Thank you very much.
Hi, Thomas Hay. I'm Associate Clinical Professor of UW Medicine, Family Medicine. When I was a freshman in high school, I didn't speak English, so I was taking remedial classes. And now, I want to say that I set a very high personal standard when it comes to excellence and hard work. So in some respect, my first blush on the 32 was like, bring it on. You know, I want my kids to be challenged. On the other hand, I've also practiced medicine in multiple settings, including Nepal, Central Africa, pretty underserved areas of Washington. So the concept of equity is very important to me. So when you say credit's a credit, class is a class, 29 and a half after 4 years is more than meeting what the state requirement is. So by then increasing it up to 32 as a requirement does not seem to meet that equity test to me. So that's what I want to say.
Angela Hay, and that was my husband. we have different ways of saying things, I think, and I'm a little bit more direct. Much more diplomatic. First, I kind of was wondering, like, okay, who voted down the 29.5? Because I do think the 29.5 does get the kids what they need to get. And some of these parents are emotional, kind of like I am, and they feel like their kids are being punished because maybe they're struggling. I have a kid, we have three. We have a ninth grader, we have a seventh grader, and we have a fifth grader. So one's not going to be affected by this, but two are. And I feel like both of my kids are going to be punished if we increase the credits for 32, because one kid is going to be capable of taking college credits, college classes in his senior year. So instead of filling the block and having to take a bunch of electives his senior year, he can maybe go to a local community college and take some college classes, or the UW or something, and take some college classes, and for first or second period or third period, whenever his free time is. And that's, I was kind of looking forward to that, because we have neighbors whose kids who did that, and they finished high school, 4 years, they didn't, you know, fool around. They went to college and finished college in 3 years, because they were able to go to local community colleges and take college credits. We have the kids who maybe are going to struggle, and they're the ones who are going to have a difficult time with the 32 credits. So we kind of have it on both ends. So I hope you really consider, instead of 32, the 29.5. I mean, I feel like even 30, okay, I can compromise on 30. But consider multiple impact on our kids. And one of the reasons that we love Liberty High School is because it gives our kids these wonderful opportunities of an 8-period class. Thank you.
Could we have, like, Paula or Josh speak to the Running Start program? Because none of this precludes kids from being able to take advantage of Running Start, which is how they can take classes at the community college. So none of this does away with that, if they want to speak to that.
Yes, students who are in good standing credit-wise as a junior can actually be full-time at a community college and be earning double credits toward college and high school. There are many kids who graduate with an associate's degree at the same time they graduate from high school, and that still would be possible.
So, Paula, I do have a question around that. So, and this is because I don't know how it works. So with either the 29.5 or with the 32, where we're requiring them in that junior and senior year, if they're at Liberty, they're in class 8 periods a day. How does that look when they're going to a community college doing those 2 years instead, as they're also earning that college credit? How does that then get come back and them getting a Liberty High School diploma as a Running Start? Well, I understand how it would work for the other two high schools, but I'm not sure how that works at Liberty.
Sure. I cannot tell you the exact breakdown of every course, but an example would be a year of, for instance, U.S. History is not a year at the community college. So you are able to gain more credits. So you're getting your credits you need here, but many of them you're doing it time-wise. I don't want to talk credit, all of that, but time-wise you're doing it more quickly. Does that answer the question?
Yeah. So that's how we get into what they're learning in that class during that time. So what that structure looks like and how they're getting basically 2 years of an associate's degree.
And just to be clear, and this might be complete news to folks who don't have any students in high school, when they go to the community college, they are a college student. They are literally a college student. So one thing that people struggle with sometimes is wanting to call and say, how's my student doing and what do they need to do? And there's no communication, and the school also does not communicate with them. But they can go, and many, many students do, and gain lots of credit toward college through the Running Start program. There's also college and high school programs.
And correct me if I'm wrong, do they have to be full-time Running Start students? Is there ways that they can do hybrids of that?
You can take two classes at Liberty and fill the rest of your day in. You can take three. There's a formula, and that's up to student choice, how many they take where.
Okay. And so that won't necessarily be, would that be impacted by our increase to 32 credits? To graduate. Okay. That was, I don't think so, for the podcast.
Yeah.
I do not believe so.
Yeah.
Well, we are at 8:25. I was hoping to get out by 8:30, but if there are any more questions or comments, you're welcome to ask that. You're also welcome. I don't know if there's any way you can throw up, like the website or the email address for the school board, but you are welcome to send an email to the school board. You do not have to send it to each one of us individually. We actually have an ISD?
Yep.
Board?
ISD board.
ISD board at issaquah.wednet.edu.
School board.
Or school board. Makes it easier. At issaquah.wednet.edu. So, and there's also, I think, a link from the website as well. We'll have the presentation from the state board. We'll have a link to it from our website at some point. So that if you want to either see that, contact them, you're welcome to do that as well. I do want to remind you that we are meeting, as far as our board meeting, is November 2nd, which is next Wednesday, which is a week from tomorrow. And do we have additional comments? Please feel free.
So, really quick, my name's Kim Hellman. I'm the one who asked the question earlier. But I have two things. I want to thank you guys for coming out tonight and talking to us. But thank you as a community. I know we appreciate that. The other thing that I do want to just bring up, and I'm not looking to get into this discussion, but in regards to homework, and I know that it is a hot topic at ISD right now, and I have a freshman at Liberty, and I have a sixth grader here at Maywood, and I have to say, beyond my wildest dreams, I am blown away at the amount of homework that my freshman has. With the 4x4 schedule, I thought, oh, this would be great because she has all this time. No. I mean, there's not one night that goes by that she has anything less than 3 hours of homework. And she is taking one AP class, and that doesn't account for the time that she actually uses for AP, because that's like 8 hours of block time, like on a weekend or that type of thing. So looking at the credits and, you know, thinking, you know, 24 credits to 29 and a half credits, and the idea, I think the idea of the block schedule is phenomenal, and the fact that we have all these electives and the ability for our kids to have and explore these things, but they still have 24 credits or 22 credits of core curriculum that they're taking, plus the electives on top of that. So I guess my request to the board next Wednesday, when you're taking this vote, think about these kids and the load that they are taking, and most of them have, on top of that, leadership or sports or other things. So, you know, all of those things, and I know that school day is the same amount of hours, but they still have two extra classes that they're taking. So, you know, it's not equal. So, and they're spending time outside of school also because they have less time with their core curriculum. So, I mean, I can tell you for a fact that even for, like, geometry, there are things that my daughter is teaching herself because she maybe didn't quite get what she needed to get in the class. So just take that into consideration. Thank you.
Can I just ask you a question? So how would our not changing the requirements have any impact on the choices your child made in those taking those courses? And I don't see how that would
To be honest with you, it's not going to impact my child because she's going to take 32 credits. I mean, she's going to go to school and she's going to go to a four-year college and she's going to do all those things. But the thing is that you've got to look at it from an overall perspective. And Liberty is completely covered and then some at 29 and a half. So the idea of creating this equality between all three schools really is obsolete because it's not equal anyway. And I think the gentleman to your right said that earlier. So I guess as a parent, seeing what I'm seeing now with a child at Liberty, you know, I'm living it. And so from the idea of, you know, let's move it to 32 because then it creates this equality across all schools, I don't think that's, you're not accomplishing really what it is that you're looking to accomplish. So I think the reality is Liberty accomplishes everything you're talking about, and with moving the electives back up into what needs to meet that 24 requirement, you're covering it, and then they still have electives that they can take on top of it. And the guided study and the things that they can take to do things, it helps to balance out that 4x4 schedule, because it is two more classes every single, you know, week that they're filling
in. And that was part of the discussion of the 4x4 schedule that is really not back on the table now. That was the choice. You end up with eight courses over the time of your year.
Right. Which has great benefits.
Right. It gives you more opportunity, but then you have more courses to take. So, yeah. I mean, that goes back to that trade-off of you get the great opportunity, but then you don't want to have to use it.
Well, and it's balance and it's course load. And the reality is, I mean, like you said, the demographics, first of all, at Liberty have changed dramatically over the last 10 years. So I think that too, in a whole, plays into everything that we're talking about. So when you look at Skyline, you look at Issaquah, you look at Liberty, from a demographic standpoint, there is much more equality that's happening today than there were, you know, was 10 years ago. So, you know, I know when you make the decision that you're going to make, you're going to look at this comprehensively. And so I know as a parent and I know as a community, we count on you as the school board members to make that choice and to make what's right for the community as it is on its own, not necessarily what it is comprehensive to all three schools. So I think you understand what it is that I'm saying, and I think that the 4x4 schedule gives lots and lots and lots of opportunity for a lot of the people in the community. And it also allows for the students who do want to move on and go to an Ivy League school or to become a doctor or a lawyer or scientist or whatever it is, you know, doing that, they're going to take those 32 credits regardless of if it's required or not. But leaving it at 29 and a half, it allows the community as a whole to have the options that they need to have for the struggling student or for the student who does need to take that guided study to balance out that AP class or the two AP classes or whatever it is that they're doing. And like we said, it accomplishes what it is that we're doing. And I think that the Issaquah School District as itself already overachieves and has, you know, test scores and students and go-getters no matter what you do. And you've got a community of parents across all of your schools that push their children to be the best that they can be all the time, and you have educators that do the same. So I just hope that you really take that all into consideration when you're taking that vote next Wednesday. Thank you.
Any other comments from the public? Okay, well, that being said, thank you so much for coming tonight, for allowing us to come and talk with you again. Please feel free to email us. Feel free to come to the board meeting. That's one of the things is we wanted to make sure that this was a conversation and that the community was involved in this decision and that you had a chance to voice your thoughts. Thank you so much.
Okay.
We are adjourned.